Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Decentralized finance, or DeFi, is, well, it's probably the most exhilarating financial revolution we've seen. The yields, the innovation.
It's incredible.
But for those of us who follow the space closely, we know there's a paradox, right?
The great paradox of innovation.
Exactly. The higher the potential return, the greater the lurking risk. The DeFi ecosystem just moves at this terrifying pace.
It does.
And just, you know, memorizing the jargon, what a DAO is, what an oracle does, that's not enough to keep your capital safe.
Precisely. We often hear that phrase, code is law.
Right.
And while that's technically true, the critical insight from the sources is that, well, the code can be fundamentally flawed, or more often, vulnerable to economic exploits that a simple audit would never catch. So understanding, identifying, and crucially, managing these complex layers of risk is absolutely essential. Without a formal, repeatable structure to evaluate protocols, you are, frankly, just rolling the dice.
That is why today our mission is to give you a shortcut, a clear path to move from being a casual DeFi observer to becoming a prepared, systematic assessor of protocol safety.
Yes.
We're basically integrating the fundamental knowledge of the five core risk factors with a practical, structured framework. We're building the due diligence template right here.
It's about merging the knowledge, the five types of risk, the what, with the structured, actionable process, the template, the how. That merger is what separates a long-term successful participant from someone who gets wiped out.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our source material lays out a clear knowledge check structure.
A foundation.
Yes, a foundation.
Yeah.
It sets up five main categories of risk that every user must master. So let's start with the one that, you know, still generates the most catastrophic headlines. The code itself.
That is smart contract risk. And the surface definition is simple, like you said. Code can have bugs. But for the informed user, the nuance is critical. We're not just talking about typos. We're talking about logic bugs, re-entrancy attacks, or even more often today, economic vulnerabilities.
And those can pass a security audit.
They can, because they often rely on external factors or unforeseen user behavior to trigger the exploit.
Wait, hold on. So if I'm trusting protocols that have been audited by, say, three different firms,
right?
Why are they still failing? What's the specific flaw we're trying to mitigate here?
That's the key question, isn't it? The old sources emphasize that while audits are necessary, they are not sufficient.
Okay.
So the immediate practical mitigation is twofold. First, yes, use well-audited protocols, but more importantly, use protocols that are time-tested. Longevity matters.
Because it survived real-world attacks.
Exactly. It has survived market volatility and attacker scrutiny. The second mitigation is behavioral. Always, always start with small amounts. That testing period is your final personal audit.
Excellent. Okay, moving on to the second type. This one feels a bit stealthier because it's not about flawed code, but flawed data. Oracle risk.
What's fascinating here is just how vital these oracles are. I mean, smart contracts are basically blind to the outside world.
Right, they can't see prices on their own.
No, they rely entirely on these external data feeds, usually for price, to do things like liquidations. If that oracle data is manipulated, protocols can be fooled, pools can be drained, and it can lead to massive loss.
And this happens through things like flash loans, right?
That's a common vector. You use a flash loan to temporarily crash a price feed.
So the obvious fix, as noted in the sources, is diversification of those data sources. But how exactly does that raise the defense level?
It raises the cost and complexity of an attack exponentially. When a protocol uses multiple decentralized oracles, say, combining feeds from Chainlink and Teller, an attacker has to compromise two distinct feeds, which often requires huge amounts of capital and complex coordination, all within a single transaction block.
So a single source is a huge red flag.
A huge red flag. You want that robust redundancy.
Next up, a risk that's less about the code and more about the human element, even if the humans are distributed, governance risk.
That's a great distinction. Many major protocols are governed by DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations.
Right.
And while the promise of decentralization is beautiful, the reality often presents a concentration of power. If that governance system is compromised, say through a hostile takeover via token aggregation, or if a few founding team wallets hold enough governance tokens, the core functions, including control over the treasury, can be seized.
That sounds terrifying. It's a social and structural assessment, not just a technical review. So how do we defend against that?
You need to do some deep due diligence on the protocol's governance structures. You have to be wary of highly centralized governance where a few addresses control most of the voting power.
So look at the wallets.
Look at the wallets, look at the voting history, the quorum requirements, the time locks on proposals. If control is in too few hands, it's not decentralized. It's a centralized liability.
Okay, now we get into the risks around leverage, starting with liquidation risk. This is a constant worry for anyone borrowing in DeFi.
Right, this is specific to lending protocols. You deposit collateral, say Ether, and you borrow stablecoins against it.
Mm-hmm.
Your position is managed by a metric called the health factor. If your collateral's value drops below a certain threshold, which can happen fast in a volatile market,
you get liquidated.
Your position is automatically liquidated. Your assets are sold off, often with a penalty fee, to cover the debt.
Okay, monitoring a health factor sounds simple in theory, but in a crazy market, isn't that a full-time job?
Yeah.
What do the sources say about tools to make this manageable?
They do acknowledge the difficulty, and they stress that the primary mitigation is behavioral. You must constantly monitor your health factors.
But practically?
For practical application, yes. They advise using available tools, dashboards, price alerts, notification bots that can monitor your collateral ratios. And crucially, the core advice is do not max out your borrowing capacity.
Leave a buffer.
Always leave a significant buffer, maybe 15 to 25% more collateral than you need to withstand those sudden market swings.
And finally, the nemesis of anyone providing liquidity. Impermanent loss, or IL. This one catches so many new people out because it's a loss relative to just holding. It feels counterintuitive.
It really does. Impermanent loss happens when LPs deposit a pair of tokens into a pool, and the prices of those two tokens diverge sharply.
Okay.
The way to think about it is that arbitragers keep the pool price in line with the market. If one token shoots up, they effectively buy that rising token cheaply from your pool and sell the cheaper token back into it.
So when you withdraw?
When you eventually withdraw your funds, you can be left with less dollar value than if you had just held the original assets in your wallet.
So the fix isn't really eliminating IL, because that's just part of the deal. It's about mitigating the impact.
Exactly. The mitigation is knowledge-based first. You must understand the concept and accept the risk of IL before you provide liquidity.
And for lower risk.
For those seeking lower risk, the sources advise considering stablecoin pairs like DAI and USDC. Because their prices barely diverge, the risk of significant impermanent loss is drastically reduced. It's a great way to generate yield while prioritizing capital preservation.
So that wraps the knowledge check. Five vectors, five essential mitigations. We've mapped the terrain.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a map without a compass just gives you anxiety. The sources insist we need a system, a formal structure, to turn this knowledge into defense.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, defining the risks is phase one. Phase two is building your analytical engine for due diligence.
Okay.
We move from knowing the what to structuring the how.
Yeah.
And that means establishing a formal risk assessment template, a crucial phase that most users just skip.
This template is basically your professional grade checklist. It stops you from just focusing on the code.
It forces systemic thinking.
Right. And we need four necessary components to create this template, as detailed in the source material.
Starting with the technical core, a detailed smart contract risk checklist. This goes way beyond just ticking an audited box.
Specifics.
You need specifics. For example, does the protocol use time lock contracts to delay major changes? That protects you from sudden rug pulls or malicious upgrades from the team.
And what about upgradability? That's a key centralization risk, right?
Yeah.
If the contract can be instantly upgraded, the risk profile just changes completely.
Absolutely. The checklist has to identify if the contract is immutable fixed forever, which is generally safer but harder to fix, or if it's upgradable. And if it is, the checklist must verify who controls that upgrade key.
Is it a multi-sig with a bunch of signers or just one or two founders?
That distinction is paramount.
Okay, second, we need to integrate the Oracle risk assessment. We discussed diversification, but what specifically should you be looking for in your template?
You need to assess the source's resilience. Are they using a single internal time-weighted average price, a TWAP, which is known to be vulnerable?
Especially for low liquidity assets.
Yes. Or are they using established external networks like Chainlink? If they use a custom or internal Oracle, your template has to demand a much higher risk rating.
Third is the governance risk analysis. This one feels more like political science than finance.
It does. For this section, you're analyzing power distribution. Look at the token distribution. what percentage is held by the team, by early investors?
Okay.
If 60% of the voting power is held by a handful of entities, that's a massive red flag. And you have to assess emergency controls. Does the DAO have a kill switch? Who can activate it?
And fourth, the complex layer.
Yeah.
The economic risk evaluation. This is where we analyze how incentives might create fragility.
This is vital because the biggest hacks today are often economic, not technical.
Yeah.
Your evaluation needs to look at token stability. Is the inflation rate manageable?
Does it encourage dumping or long-term alignment?
Exactly. And crucially, look for runaway inflation mechanisms or models that encourage users to take on excessive debt. If the platform rewards reckless leveraging, the economic model itself is a systemic risk.
So the value of this template approach for you, the listener, is that it enforces critical thinking. It ensures you're checking all these vectors, governance, oracles, economics, beyond just asking, has the code been audited?
Absolutely. It moves you towards professional-grade due diligence. It removes the emotional element and substitutes it with structured analysis.
Fantastic. So we've defined the five risks. We've built the four-component template. Now for the practical application. Here's where it gets really interesting. Phase three. Evaluating a real DeFi protocol with this framework.
This is where theory meets reality and where you, the user, execute the due diligence. The sources detail four essential action steps for this final phase.
Step one, identify risks. This means applying those five categories to the specific protocol you're looking at. So if it's a new vault, you need to identify its smart contract risk, its oracle risk, its economic risk.
Exactly. Step two, assess severity. Not all risks are equal. You have to assign both a likelihood and a potential impact score. An unaudited contract on a new protocol, high likelihood, high impact. A well-known protocol with a minor governance bug, lower severity. That assessment determines your mitigation.
Which is step three, recommend mitigations. Based on the risks you found, what can you do to lower your exposure? If you identified high liquidation risk, your mitigation is simple. Borrow less.
Right. Or if you found upgradability risk controlled by a small group, your mitigation might be to only test with a tiny amount of funds or just wait.
This is the action step.
Yes.
It moves you from observer to active risk manager.
And finally, step four, decide if it's safe to use. This decision is the ultimate output of the entire process. It's not based on FOMO or hype. It's a binary choice. Yes or no, informed entirely by your analysis.
And if you can't mitigate a high severity risk to an acceptable level,
the answer must be no.
And this process, this clarity, is really the shortcut. It prevents information overload. Instead of drowning in docs, you have a filter. Four steps, four template components, addressing five core risks. It tells you what to look for.
It provides the clear structure needed for making safe, rational decisions in what is, you know, an inherently risky environment. It lets you participate confidently because you've done your homework.
So what does this all mean when we zoom out and synthesize the core lessons for safe, long-term participation?
The sources gave five absolutely critical key takeaways that really wrap all this up. They're like your final set of guardrails.
Okay.
The first is just acknowledging multiple risk types. You have to internalize that risk is more than just code bugs. It's economic, it's governance, it's oracle risk.
The second and probably the most foundational is due diligence. Always research protocols before you use them. No excuses. Run the template we just discussed.
The third is a behavioral one that saves lives in volatile markets. Start small. Test with tiny, insignificant amounts first. Never commit significant capital until you've personally verified everything.
Fourth, diversify. It's standard advice, but critical here. Don't put all your funds in one protocol. If one thing fails, you aren't completely wiped out.
And the final one, reflecting the speed of the industry. Stay informed. Follow protocol updates and security news. Yesterday's safe contract might be tomorrow's vulnerability if a new exploit is discovered.
That is a powerful and necessary set of guardrails for anyone in this space. We've built the map and we've built the compass.
And the need for this kind of risk management is only going to intensify. We focused on layer one risks today, but our sources hint at future topics like layer twos,
right,
which just add more complexity, more connectivity, and new cross-chain risk vectors.
Which leads perfectly into our final provocative thought for you to consider.
If managing risk is already a life or death exercise in the current DeFi landscape, which is mostly on individual layer one chains, how will our assessment frameworks need to fundamentally evolve when new technologies like layer twos, cross-chain bridges, and shared sequencing layers add new layers of complexity and connectivity and potentially new unforeseen systemic risks to the entire ecosystem? Think about that exponential complexity as you conduct your next deep dive.